Unlock the terror with my Patreon. Gain access to my archive of over 50 bonus episodes and be the first to hear new releases. Your support fuels my horror storytelling. On the 9th of December 2009, a blue spiral appeared in the night sky of northern Norway. For about 10 minutes, the bizarre phenomenon provided the inhabitants of Norway with a brilliant spectacle, before vanishing into thin air without a trace nor an explanation. Though the exact location of the spiral remains a disputed matter, those who witnessed it claim to have seen it over the northern oceans in the vicinity of the Russian border. Coincidentally, the Russians would claim the phenomenon to have been little more than a failed missile test, harmless to those who witnessed it. Yet, on the following December morning, locals in the little-known town of Hafjellet would find the mangled remains of hundreds of dead animals lining the coast, some shredded to fleshy bits, while others appeared to have simply drowned. Among the dead were birds, foxes, reindeer, cats, and dogs. But the horrors didn't end there, as even polar bears were found among the deceased, approximately 2,000 kilometers from their natural habitat. Those who reported the dead could only describe the deaths as unnatural, with several people requiring psychiatric care to deal with the sights. By the time the authorities were alerted, the coast had been conveniently cleared by an unknown party, causing the event to fall to obscurity. At the time, it was hardly even covered by any news station outside the local communities. Though some footage of the light can still be found online today, the true extent of it can't be conveyed from the grainy videos and images. The oversaturated nature of it, its blue hue, and the fact that even closing your eyes couldn't blind it out entirely, was something words can't adequately describe. Those who were close enough to witness it firsthand describe it as a paradoxically beautiful view that put sheer terror into their souls. But even then, the locals were quick to jot it down as a peculiar thing of little importance. As the years went on, the memories started to fade. And after a decade of peace in the night sky, we thought we'd be safe up in the north forever. That was until the light returned once more, on the 20th of February, 2023. But this time, I don't think anyone left alive will forget the horrors they witnessed on that fateful day, no matter how much they might want to. Once again, I found myself on the floor, crawling around as I searched for my glasses. The sight came much to the amusement of my optically gifted wife. It had only been a year since a workplace accident had left me partially blind, and with an unnatural fear of contact lenses, I couldn't get used to them.
"Getting warmer,"
Linda teased, pointing to a spot on the sofa I'd been sitting only moments prior. I grabbed them with a sigh, just in time to see a pair of bright headlights racing through our streets at twice the speed limit. The sound of its engine roaring through the dead of night.
"What the hell was that?"
I asked.
"A car! It just sped past. Oh my God!"
Both of us knew that the street outside our house ended in a sharp turn. At those speeds, a crash would be inevitable. And even though we braced for the noise, we jumped at the sound of the vehicle colliding with the house.
"Call an ambulance!"
I ordered as I rushed out the door to aid whoever had gotten involved in the accident. There, down the street, a car had plunged through a fence into a garden, only to be finally stopped by the wall of a house. It had broken through the wooden exterior, but luckily hadn't gotten far inside. I could only pray that no one had gotten hurt. Inside the house, the lights were turned off, which made me hope the inhabitants weren't home. On the other hand, the clock was about to strike midnight, which meant they were most likely asleep. I ran through the dark, surprised that none of the neighbors had come out to inspect the crash. Had no one heard the excessively loud noise?
"Hey, are you all right? Are you hurt?"
I yelled as I got closer to the wreck. The wooden wall had splintered in such a way that several stakes penetrated the windshield. Even from a distance, I could tell we'd be requiring an ambulance quickly. A part of me wanted to run, too much of a coward to face the horrors to come. But there was no one else around to provide aid. I was alone on the street. I had to help them.
Please be okay,
I mumbled as I walked up to the driver's seat. I gasped in shock as I saw the state of the poor driver. The wooden planks had been pushed in through the window and were plunged deep into the man's chest. In addition, the front of the car was smashed up badly enough to crush his lower body. But to my surprise, the driver remained conscious, staring ahead as if in some sort of trance. He didn't even appear to register my presence, nor his fatal injuries. He just sat there, his breathing slowed, his chest rising up against the wood that was slowly killing him. A sick, crackling sound filled the air as blood filled his lungs, but he didn't even seem to care.
Don't worry, help is on the way,
I tried to assure the driver, keeping my ears peeled for sirens in the distance. I inspected his mangled body, wondering if I could somehow get him out of the car. But I immediately realized that I stood no chance of removing him from the wreck, much less help him. His legs and chest were bleeding profusely. It was a miracle he was even able to breathe. On the other side of the broken wall, I saw little more than an empty living room, now filled with debris and dust. It provided a minuscule amount of solace to know that no one else had gotten hurt. But as the seconds ticked, any hope I had left turned to dread, as I realized the man would be dead within minutes.
I'm so sorry this happened to you,
I let out in a mere whisper, but he was either too broken or unwilling to respond. At that point, I wasn't sure what scared me the most. The act of watching a fellow human being take his last breaths, or the fact that he didn't seem fazed by his rapidly approaching demise at all. He could have been in shock from the accident, but something about his empty expression felt wrong. By the time he'd fallen unconscious from blood loss, I was standing frozen by the wreck. Minutes might have passed, even hours, and I wouldn't have known. Still, help had yet to arrive, even if only to recover the man's dead body. Violent deaths were a rare occurrence in our dormant town, so the fact that no one had come to check on the wreck felt all too bizarre. The neighborhood had remained utterly silent. I stood all alone. Something was terribly wrong. My frozen state was interrupted by the soul-shattering shriek of a siren penetrating the quiet atmosphere. But instead of it being an ambulance or police car, the sound emerged from one of the old World War II air raid sirens Norway still had in abundance. I snapped back to attention, confused and afraid from the sound. What possible reason could they have to ring it in the dead of night? One last time, I glanced back at the man. His breathing had long since stopped, and he remained stuck in his metal coffin. Knowing I could do nothing to alter his fate, I decided to return home, hoping the authorities would arrive quickly to assess the situation. Yet, the streets remained eerily empty, even as the siren screeched its song through the neighborhood. Not a single light turned on, nor did a door or window open to greet the terrors outside. It was as if the town had been emptied, leaving me alone to face whatever was to come. Then I finally saw a couple of familiar faces just as I neared my house. A young couple, both standing outside in their nightgowns, staring into the distance away from the siren.
Jonas? Shane?
I called out as I approached them. No response.
Please, I need your help. There was an accident down the street. A car crashed into the house and a man was hurt. I tried to help, but I didn't know what to do. We need to call for help.
I spilled out in a jumbled mess. Still, they refused to respond.
Hello? Are you okay? What's going on?
I went on as I slowly approached them. They just stood there, staring off into the distance. But it wasn't until I got closer before I realized exactly what had caught their attention. They were looking up at the night sky, at a familiar blue figure hovering over the coast of our quiet town. The same spiral we'd seen more than a decade prior, a phenomenon long since forgotten.
Oh my God! It's happening again!
I gasped, but their emotionless expressions weren't one of awe or shock. It was exactly the same expression carried by the man in the car wreck, an empty look of utter transfixion. I knew then that it was the spiral affecting them. But why had I been untouched by its hypnosis? With that thought, a crushing realization dragged me back to attention. Linda was still at home, alone. Not knowing how to snap my neighbors out of it, I rushed back home to make sure my wife hadn't been hit by the same spell. I barged in through the door, basically throwing myself into the living room, where I found the television still running. On the screen hung a static image with simple instructions. Do not look at the sky. I only gave myself a moment to look at the TV before calling out for Linda. I ran from room to room, screaming for my wife, but she was nowhere to be found. After futilely checking each room twice and trying to overpower the excruciating volume of the siren, I decided to alert the police. I grabbed my phone, dialed their number, and waited for it to ring. It rang once. No one picked up. Twice. No response. Three times. But there was still no help to be found on the other end. Four, five, six times. I was left alone to stand my ground. No one would come to my aid. I tried a dozen times calling the police, calling for an ambulance, the fire brigade, but none would answer my desperate calls for help. With no good options left, I knew I had to take matters into my own hands. I decided to head into town to look for Linda, or anyone still conscious enough to help. I grabbed my deceased father's hunting rifle, knowing I'd be too inexperienced to properly wield it. I could only pray that I wouldn't need it, figuring it would be better safe than sorry. Then I headed to my car. Outside, I was immediately met with my elderly, demented neighbor standing in a bathrobe. She called out for her cat, not realizing her voice was too frail to penetrate the sound of the deafening alarm. And yet, the fact that she'd escaped the powers of the blue spiral as well ignited an ember of hope.
Marie? How are you not?
I began.
Have you seen Asta?
She asked.
I can't find her. She needs to be fed.
It was obvious from her general condition that she wouldn't be of much help. So, I carefully suggested she go back inside and wait for her cat to come back home.
Marie, I need you to go back inside,
I calmly ordered, familiar with her random strolls into the night. She squinted her eyes at me, unable to recognize me in the dark. I put a gentle hand on her shoulder, trying to guide her inside, but she shoved it away.
I need to find Asta,
she yelled.
I'll find Asta for you, all right? I just need you to wait inside,
I demanded, a bit firmer that time. She nodded before walking back inside. Only then did I realize that the other, transfixed neighbors had vanished. For a second, I wondered if the spell had been broken. But then I got a glimpse of people walking down the main road in the distance, barely illuminated by the streetlights. Taking Linda's car, I started heading in their general direction. As I pulled onto the main road, I was met with the sight of a dozen people, all walking towards the coast, in the direction of the blue spiral in the sky. I slowed down, honking my horn and flashing the headlights at them, but they remained unfazed. It was another stage of the hypnosis, dragging helpless people towards the light, and there was nothing I could do to stop them. Even had I tried, I was only one man. I might be able to hold down one of them, but there were just too many to physically restrain. A few of the people, however, appeared to be in control of themselves. Among them was an old man calling out for his grandchildren, who were leaving him behind. I glanced over at the poor man, too weak to hold them back, too confused to understand what was going on. I gave him a quick look of pity, but I didn't have time to help him. Then, as I redirected my attention back to the road, I was immediately forced to hit the brakes hard, barely coming to a halt in front of a young man standing in the middle of the road, waving his hands at me. The headlight reflected brightly off his glasses and jacket, rendering him as a white silhouette in the dark.
What are you doing?
I yelled out through the window.
Please help,
he begged.
My mom, there's something wrong with her. She's not the only one. Where is she?
I asked.
I don't know. She got lost in the crowd. It's dark. I couldn't,
he said, stumbling over his own words.
Just get in the car. I think I know where they're heading.
I glanced up at the blue spiral. In the brief time since it had appeared, it seemed to have gotten brighter. Its blue hue casting hard shadows as it illuminated both people and buildings.
Thank you, thank you, thank you,
he said in a panic as he got into the front passenger seat.
Calm down. It's going to be okay,
I lied.
What's your name?
David,
he said.
I'm Stian. Do you have any idea what the fuck is going on?
No idea. We were just watching television when the alarm went off. I thought they were just testing the siren. But as we walked to the window and saw that light in the sky, my mom just froze. I tried to stop her from leaving, but she kept pushing me away. I couldn't.
He tried to get it out, the words getting stuck in his throat.
It's going to be okay. We'll get them back,
I said, trying my best to sound confident.
I hope so,
he mumbled back.
But you said you knew where they were heading. Do you think they're going towards the light?
I just nodded.
We'll follow them to the coast.
How are we going to stop them?
David asked.
We'll have to improvise when we get there.
With the main road crawling with the transfixed inhabitants, we decided to take an alternate route. We sped down an old dirt road, only slowing down to avoid hitting the occasional straggler walking mindlessly in the middle of nowhere. I honked at them out of pure instinct, but they wouldn't budge. As we neared the coastline, we were met by the terrifying sight of about 100 silhouettes down by the ocean, staring up to the sky as they walked voluntarily into the freezing water. Among them weren't only people, but dogs, cats, birds, reindeer, even seals. All of them walking or swimming against the waves, heading for the spiral in the sky. The sight distracted me for just long enough to not notice a naked man who'd wandered into our path. I reflexively steered away, barely avoiding hitting him. But the sudden turn, combined with the poor grip of the road, caused us to slide into a ditch, coming to a full stop a few hundred meters away from the ocean.
Fuck!
I let out as I tried to assess the damage.
Are you hurt?
David groaned, but shook his head. Though we were more or less unharmed, the car was stuck. We'd be forced to traverse the last stretch on foot. We jogged towards the transfixed crowd, noticing a handful of conscious people among them, desperately trying to restrain their loved ones, physically pulling them away from the icy waters. But with those awake, consisting mostly of elderly people, their efforts proved futile. A few of the transfixed had even been tied down, but it wasn't enough to put a dent in the crowd. The path we'd taken had been quite a distance longer than the main road, but even with our accident, we should have gotten there before Linda and David's mother had the chance to arrive. We spurted through the crowd, desperately calling out for our families.
Linda!
I screamed, knowing she wouldn't respond. I took my first few steps into the water, immediately losing all sensation in my feet from the cold. Yet, those around me didn't seem fazed by the temperature, even as their faces turned blue from the cold. I knew then that most, if not all of them, would be dead by the end of the night. David had run ahead, calling out for his mother. He was standing waist deep in the ocean, visibly shivering where he stood. Then he froze in place for a second. I feared he'd been lost to the spiral, a worry that was quickly shattered as he yelped out in panic.
Oh my God!
He gasped, as he stared at a couple of men who were bleeding profusely from deep cuts in their chests.
What the fuck happened to them?
I asked as I caught up with them.
I don't know. He was fine a second ago. He just started bleeding.
I inspected the cut, immediately realizing that he required urgent care. But as I contemplated how to help him, I noticed another cut form along his abdomen, appearing out of thin air. It was as if someone was slowly slicing him with a knife, an invisible being taking its time to murder the man. Before I could even react, a third cut formed, reaching all the way to his neck. Little by little, he was shredded to bits, never reacting, just continuing his journey towards the light before his body finally gave out to blood loss. Horrified, I decided to leave him behind and continue my search for Linda. By then, I figured she must have reached the coast. If I let her enter the water, I knew I'd be too late. More of the people around us started to become affected by the strange cuts, their bodies torn to pieces as they attempted to reach the spiral, in the midst of it all, I would catch brief glimpses of something else reflected in the blue light. Bizarre, spindly creatures moving at impossible speeds through the crowd, slicing at them with long, sharp appendages. I tried to follow their movement, but it appeared as if they faded in and out of existence.
David, there's something else out here with us!
I let out in shock. The rest of the conscious people seemed to have noticed them too, and started to retreat back to the shore.
Did you see that?
A panicked woman asked, as she pointed to a seal that had been slit open.
There was a thing, a monster!
More of the long, spindly creatures phased in and out of sight, slashing at their victims as they passed. They only existed for split seconds before fading back into the darkness.
Oh God, they're everywhere!
David cried out.
We need to get out of here! I'm not going anywhere without Linda!
I shot back in a mixture of fear and anger. In that very same moment, I saw her standing just on the edge of the ocean. Without skipping a beat, I rushed towards the horde of reality-breaking creatures, sacrificing everything to get Linda out of there. I screamed her name,
Linda!
But she kept wandering towards the light, ignoring the cold waves brushing up against her. I tripped on the sandy ground and crawled towards her in utter desperation. In the background, I could hear David call my name, but I couldn't leave her behind. I couldn't let the monsters get her. Then I reached her, grabbing onto her ice-cold skin, trying to just get a proper grip as I noticed the first cut appear on her arm. Blood poured from the newly formed wound, damage she'd just ignored. A large wave pushed me away from her, but she kept walking further into the ocean. A second cut appeared, this time on her back. I got another glimpse of the mangled creature slashing at her, cutting her flesh with ease.
No!
I screamed, but my protests did nothing to aid her. Around her, the water started to turn red as more cuts formed on her body, and by the time I could even reach her, she collapsed into the water. Her body had grown too weak to support itself, allowing the waves to drag her further away, out of sight. I dove under to grab her, but in the darkness, and with my glasses long since washed away, I didn't stand a chance. Before I could return to the surface, I felt someone grab onto me. It was David, accompanied by another survivor, forcefully pulling me back to shore as I screamed in despair. They dragged me through the bloody water, covered in the shredded corpses of people and animals alike. It had only been a quarter hour since we arrived, but in that time span, hundreds had succumbed to the monsters in the night, creatures that were somehow connected to the blue spiral in the sky.
She's gone!
David yelled.
We have to leave now!
Once we arrived back on solid ground, we collapsed from exhaustion. Only a handful of survivors remained, with the rest either dead or hiding back in town. While we caught our breaths, we stared out at the mangled piles of flesh. But despite the horrific view, we knew we needed to run. Though the question still remained, would the creatures attack those not yet captivated by the light? My question was promptly answered, as a young woman fell to the ground with her abdomen torn open, killed by a single slash. She didn't even have time to scream in agony. She just plumped over dead. A few ran to aid her, only to join her in her death as more creatures attacked, hacking them to pieces where they stood.
Run!
David ordered, knowing we could do nothing to help those already wounded. With my car stuck in a ditch, we were forced to follow the main road into town on foot. As we fled, survivors were cut down around us. Anyone that fell even slightly behind were immediately slashed down by the monsters. They only appeared in short glimpses, not enough to make out the details of their beings, but the little I had already seen horrified me. Sweat poured down my face, blinding my already weak eyes. Enough so that I tripped over a rock, sending me pummeling to the ground face first. I groaned as I witnessed the rest of the survivors step over me and run ahead. I tried to push myself up, but with my arms frozen in the sub-zero temperature and my energy running out, I could barely get back up on my feet. I knew that within seconds, the monsters would be all over me. But just as I had decided to give up, I felt David's hand grab mine. He pulled me back to my feet, intervening in my death for a second time.
Do you want to die here?
He asked as he pushed me forward. I noticed then just how oddly warm my wet back felt. I had just come out of freezing water, yet the liquid was hot to the touch. I dragged my hand over my back, quickly realizing it was covered in blood. In the short span I'd been lying on the ground, one of the creatures had cut me. Ignoring the wound, I did my best to keep up with the others. Those who fell wounded behind were quickly forgotten, few willing to risk their lives to carry them to safety. By the time we reached town, only 5 of us remained. Ahead stood the town's police station, our only possible refuge from the hidden assailants. A few senior officers stood outside with their weapons raised to greet us. They ordered us to get behind them before firing a few shots in the dark. They had rung loud through the night air before landing us in utter silence. The creatures were gone, possibly taking caution due to the firearms.
"Get inside,"
one of the officers ordered. They led us through the doors, carefully retreating back with us as they kept their eyes peeled on the streets ahead. With none of them falling dead out of nowhere, it looked like we were in the clear. A few survivors resided inside, not more than a dozen, some children and elderly too weak to fight. From the front entrance, a long hallway extended towards the back of the station, where an old bomb shelter was situated, full on with heavy-set metal doors meant to withstand nuclear blasts. A common find around Norwegian schools, hospitals, and old police stations. Makeshift barricades lined the hallways, meant not to stop the creatures, but to slow them down. Though from seeing them firsthand, I knew it would do nothing to prevent our inevitable demise in case of an attack.
"Does anyone know how to handle these?"
one of the officers asked, his name tag reading Hansen. David and I both raised our hands, alongside 2 of the other survivors. A young man by the name of Kevin, who wore a large scar over his right eye which was missing, and a woman called Dina. Though I only handled a rifle once in my teenage years, I felt compelled to fight back, more out of revenge than self-preservation. We all knew that any attack would lead to our certain deaths, but what other choice did we have?
"Is help coming?"
Dina asked Officer Hansen, who promptly shook his head.
"We've tried to reach out. No one's responding. Even our walkies have stopped working. I figure the spiral has something to do with it, but we're pretty much stuck here until someone notices we're missing."
He handed each of us a rifle and told us to stay behind the barricades in the back. He and his colleagues would take the front line, not knowing if bullets could even harm them. Should they fall, our only job would be to make sure the rest of the survivors locked themselves inside the bomb shelter.
"If anyone wants to make a run for it, this is your last chance,"
Hansen explained.
"But I can't promise you it's any safer out there."
David looked to me with questioning eyes.
"You staying?"
"Yeah, I don't have anything to run for. Not without Linda."
The world outside had turned uncomfortably silent. Even the intermittent screams from survivors running through town had quieted down. It was almost as if we were the only ones left alive. We were left in a world bathing in a blue light, filled to the brim with monstrosities from a world outside our wildest nightmares. We could all die, and none of us would ever get to ask why.
"Remember, if we fall, run for the bomb shelter,"
Hansen demanded.
"But if we hit them and they bleed like the rest of us, make sure they suffer for what they've done to our peaceful town."
We nodded in agreement, just in time for the silence to be broken by a soul-shattering scream. One of the officers on guard had his arm cut clean off, causing him to drop his gun. The others fired upon the creature in return, but it quickly faded into nothing before we could properly take aim.
"If you see anything, fire!"
Hansen yelled. The wounded officer ran back to our barricade, where I used his belt as a makeshift tourniquet. He groaned in agony as blood poured from his stump. I couldn't stop it entirely, but at least we bought him some time.
"Can you make it to the back?"
I asked him, to which he nodded. A few more shots rang throughout the room, followed by an almost ecstatic voice screaming,
"I got one!"
On the floor lay one of the creatures, rapidly fading in and out of existence, as a black tar-like substance dripped from its slender center. The officers fired a few more rounds into its body. It tried to retreat, slowly crawling back outside as more creatures poured in.
"There's too many of them!"
Hansen screamed, but his words were cut short as something sliced through his throat. He collapsed to the ground, dead in a few seconds, forcing the last two officers to retreat to our position. We provided what little cover fire we could, hitting a few of the creatures as they neared. Though the bullets didn't appear to kill them, it hurt them enough to think twice about striking. But by the time we paused to reload, more than a dozen of the monstrosities had gathered, each of them phasing in and out of reality, getting closer each split second they appeared.
Run!
I managed to get out before getting pushed to the ground. A deep gash had appeared in my left hand, severing a tendon. It had left me unable to pull the trigger, even if I hadn't dropped my weapon during the fall. One by one, the survivors were cut down as they attempted to reach the bomb shelter. I crawled away, just barely making it to safety before getting back on my feet. Behind me, I heard the rest scream in agony as their flesh was stripped from their bones. They just kept firing their weapons until the last man had been murdered. They sliced through the furniture that had been used to build the barricade, making their way closer to the last of the survivors. I called out for David, only to find his lifeless body lying in a pile of mangled flesh with the rest of our guards. I was the last man standing between them and the survivors already inside the bomb shelter.
"We're all going to die. This is it,"
I mumbled to myself in shock. I turned to the still open metal door, wondering if I should face my end with the fighters or hide away with the rest. For a moment, I even considered bringing a gun inside, not to fight, but to make sure the children had a painless death, rather than getting torn apart by the monsters. In the end, I knew I didn't have the heart to murder my fellow human beings, even if it meant saving them from a brutal death. So, I walked inside, closing and locking the heavy door behind me, before falling to the floor from a mixture of exhaustion and blood loss.
"They're dead. They're all dead,"
I let out between breaths. The wounded cop lay unconscious in one of the corners. My tourniquet, not enough to stop the bleeding. The rest of the survivors were all in shock, only one of them tending to my wound, patching it up the best she could. Silence fell over us for a short moment, giving us a minute to brace ourselves. I wondered if the door would be enough to hold them back. After all, it was meant to withstand a nuclear blast. Or so I remember being told as a child going through drills in preparation for World War III during the end of the Cold War. When the door remained closed, I almost dared to consider that the creatures would give up in search of easier targets. But the feeble hope was quickly stripped away as one of them knocked on the door with all its might. The clung rang out through the room as a minuscule dent formed in the metal. A few more seconds passed, then it knocked a second time, further damaging the door. More of them joined in, hammering at the metal as it gave in to the force. A wall meant to withstand nuclear blasts, giving in to the creatures that had come in through the spiral light in the sky. Survivors were cowering in the corners, each of them aware that we'd be dead within minutes. But I just sat there by the door, staring at the breaking metal, almost admiring the strength of these things. My life would end among the others, but it was a death I welcomed. I had fought to survive, to save those around me, but it was all for naught. With each successive hit, the door grew weaker, then it finally cracked, allowing a small hole to form. On the other side, I could see the creature's face, basking its obsidian black skin in the nightmarish blue light. For a moment, it just stared at me with its empty holes. That might not even been eyes. It had stopped its attempt at getting through, pitying our pathetic attempts to fight back. We looked at each other for what felt like an eternity in absolute silence.
"Come on, man, kill me!"
I yelled at it, surprised at the volume of my own voice.
"What the fuck are you waiting for? Do it!"
I continued, ordering it to keep going. But it just stood there, staring.
"You already took everything from us! Now finish the job!"
I don't know what I expected from it right then and there, but instead of tearing the door open and hacking us to pieces, it just turned around and left. As if the hunt had ended in the midst of a kill, the creature showed no further interest in us. It vanished into the night before I could even begin to comprehend what had just happened. And with it, the blue hue that penetrated the darkness of night faded away. Silence filled the air as the blue light retreated back into the darkness, and those of us still alive were left in shock. Though we all knew they had left, none were brave enough to peek outside, much less ask if we'd actually been spared. But as the silence went on, and nothing returned to rip us apart, I finally unlocked the door and walked outside. The hallway was clear, and the bodies of our friends had been removed alongside the creatures, presumably taken back to the light from which the monsters had come. With trepidation in each step, we gathered outside to look up at the night sky. The blue spiral had vanished, replaced by a cloudy night rid of stars, with a moon just barely peeking through to greet us. Whatever nightmare we'd just been a part of had ended. No bodies were recovered in the aftermath of the attack, nor were any of the missing people discovered. With that in mind, it was hard to prove what we'd seen, and even harder to explain what had happened to our loved ones. Those who investigated the case refused to believe us, jotting it down to a bizarre case of mass hysteria yet to be explained. I can only imagine the real truth to be hidden by agencies far above our reach, who will never bless us with answers. Not that it matters, because those who died aren't coming back. And though we survived the horrors of the blue spiral, I'm not sure any of us will ever return to a life worth living.